A Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas taking you right up till 6 o'clock tonight. Then it's time for the Urban Meyer Show. Coach Meyer and company will break down their matchup this weekend against Penn State. We will have that game for you here on AM 930 WEOL. They'll kick it at 3:30. Pregame coverage begins at 2. Well, we have a gentleman in the studio with us right now, Mr. Douglas, a guy who is used to doing what you and I do. He's a much funnier guy than you and I, though. We've got Dean Zarbaugh here in studio with us. Dean, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you and Glenn Longwell are going to co-host an event at Blank Slate Elyria on Friday. Sounds like it's going to be really awesome. What are the details?
Yeah, it's right over here on Kerstetter Way, 2 Kerstetter Way. Our buddy Eddie runs Blank Slate. He's doing a great job with it. It's a great art space for people in Elyria. They had not done, it's mostly a music video, so they have not done a comedy show. And Eddie was one of the first few people we'd had on our podcast, so we're like, hey, let's do a comedy show. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we've got a few people on the show. Glenn and I, like you said, are hosting. We have Swami Lawrence, Josh Lohorn, Chris Wernowski, and Mike Ivey, all of whom are very great comics. I know Chris and Mike specifically. Glenn's friends with everybody. I have not gotten out in Cleveland as much as I should have, so I have not networked with everybody, but it will be a really fun show.
Cool stuff. But you have a lineup like that, too. It's a chance, really, for, I think, folks at Elyria to get out there and see some really good comics. And I would imagine, too, it's a really cool and very exciting atmosphere also for those comics to get out there and get a chance to perform. Now, you know what being a good stand-up comic takes. So enlighten us a little bit and give us an idea as to how you kind of got into that.
Growing up, I always watched shows like SNL, and I always loved watching stand-up and people perform comedy, and I was like, try to make people laugh, and I moved out to L.A. Right after college in 2009, and a buddy of mine moved out a little bit after that, and we both kind of wanted to do the stand-up thing, and we just decided to go out one night, and it was a little coffee shop in a little small part of L.A. and just did a little open mic and kind of just grew from there.
Did your confidence grow from there too? Because I think that's the biggest thing. We'll bring people in every now and again. You know, they're big talkers. You can't get them to stop. But then you put a microphone in front of them, and it's the craziest thing. Yeah. It's like their minds just go blank.
It's almost the opposite with me. Huh. You put a microphone in front of me, and you can't get me to shut up. But off the microphone, I'm rather quiet sometimes and don't really try to be as animated. It's a very weird. I'm very much in my head a lot, even on stage, just trying to figure out what I'm going to say.
Sure. Where do you draw your material from? Just common everyday life stuff?
A lot of it's sometimes I try to do new stuff. I always liked Weekend Update.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried to do some stuff with that, and that's a hard one to do because you always risk making somebody mad.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of life experiences and just what I see on TV or just things that pop into my head randomly. Like the other day, I thought I got the name wrong for an ornithologist, which is someone who studies bird. I thought I had a dyslexia moment. I thought it was ornithologist, and I was like, well, that's someone who studies OJ. And that was something that it's just a weird thing that popped into my head, and there's no reason for that to be
that's
in there.
Funny.
You mentioned Weekend Update. We've got to ask, do you have a favorite Weekend Update anchor?
Norm.
Uh-huh. Okay, see, there's two. I loved Kevin Nealon. I thought Kevin
Nealon's
was
great.
Fantastic.
I just loved Norm because of what he just – everybody kept telling him to lay off OJ, and he just was like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Well, he didn't hit the ESPYs either. He goes to the ESPYs, and he still hits with the OJ.
Oh, yeah. He has his own thing on Amazon now where he gets to interview people, and that's really cool. But Norm was awesome. He was always just snappy and punchy, and he would just go out there one night, you know, some nights and just try to do weird things. And I just like that.
Loved to have been Dirty Work.
Oh, yeah.
God, that movie was so awesome.
Yeah. That era of movies, like Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison and all that. Oh, man. That was the comedy heyday.
Now, is that kind of part of like what got you started getting into comedy?
Yeah, my buddy Charlie and I, we would all in high school, we would go around quoting Billy Madison and and Happy Gilmore and stuff, and you know, just to make each other laugh. And I would listen to a lot of Adam Sandler's like albums.
Oh, the old CDs.
There was just the bits that he did, the way he connected, you know, A to B, sometimes really weird. And I always liked that weird, like, you kind of come out of left field type humor.
He came way out of left field, Sandler.
Yeah, he did. And he's still doing that. And I respect that he's gotten to a point now where he doesn't even wear like a suit to his own movie premieres. He just wears shorts. And he only goes and does movies that are off in exotic locations so he can take his family on vacation.
He's like, got made now. I mean, yeah, he's got that deal with Netflix too.
Like, oh, yeah.
He's doing whatever he wants to these days, and no one can really tell him any different because he owns everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So he's obviously made it. I'm just curious. I mean, from doing shows out in L.A., coming from LaGrange, Ohio, which is probably not the largest town in America.
No, not at all.
What's that like? I mean, you're doing
different
cultures out there.
Yeah, it was. I lived in Orlando right before I moved out, so I was still in a big city before I went out to L.A. Kind of got me ready to go out there. But yeah, it was. The hardest thing to get used to is how expensive everything was. And, you know, just to go out and get a beer, it's like $3 for a Bud Light. And you're like, oh, man. Like, that was like a cheap area. And most of the time it was like $6-7. And you're like, oh, for PBR, come on, man. That was the hardest part, is just getting used to the pricing. And it's just going up.
What's it like on stage, though? When you're doing a show in L.A. and coming back to Elyria, do you need to change material? Find it pretty much?
Oh, yeah, because I did, when I first came back, I did a show in Cleveland, and it was, we talk about like L.A. set and non-L.A. set. In L.A., you have, a lot of times you're performing at open mics, and open mics are just filled with comedians who are looking at their phones, studying their own material. And not really paying attention to you.
Yeah.
But if you get a really big laugh in that room, you know that something's good, because it actually got people to look away from their phones.
Uh-huh.
But you go out and you do that set, and sometimes you're doing those things, you're saying things just to shock somebody to get look up from their phone. And that doesn't always work just anywhere else. And that I found that came to a crashing halt at that show. I was like, oh, and I've not been back to that show as such. But it's hard to get used to the different audiences. That's been one of the bigger challenges.
Dean Zarbaugh's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Check him out tomorrow at Blank Slate Elyria. Well, you mentioned different audiences, different spots. You had an experience with Second City, and anybody that knows comedy knows just how big of a deal that is. I mean, it's like kind of like a who's who of comedy. All the big names pretty much have gone through Second City. And it's funny, you and I were talking before we went on the air, you know, the pictures that you saw walking through the doors of Second City, these comedy legends. What was that experience like?
Nerve-wracking. It was very nerve-wracking. But that was what was great about improv, is a lot of stand-ups like to give improv its licks because it's not what they do, and they just kind of see it as this always happy, always up type thing. And it's because most comics are cynical at heart, that there's this weird kind of off-putting nature to improv to some people. But you go in there and they're so welcoming that it really takes the nerves away. They work with you. It's like, you can't do anything wrong. Just don't say no. You can just do whatever you want, and it's fine if you don't get a laugh. We're not here to tell jokes. We're here to build a scene. And I really did it because I wanted to take acting classes, and I couldn't afford them, but I could afford Second City. And so I was like, I'll just go to Second City. I've always wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. All my favorite comedians have been through there. Let's just go do that. And it was a lot of fun. I was glad I did it. And it builds your confidence for when you're on stage, even just as a stand-up.
So Second City primarily isn't teaching you as much stand-up as it is sketch comedy, or is it both?
I think they have a stand-up class as well, if I remember correctly, that to help people kind of get into it. But it's not, you're not writing anything. Everything is literally, it's like a lot of my classes were like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Okay.
Type of games where you're kind of just, you're just trying to be in the moment. You're just trying to think of the first thing that comes to your head and just build the scene as much as you can. And it's not always about the joke. It's just about the scene at core.
Interesting. See, because when you think about Second City, and Second City came here, boy, I mean, I'm sure they've been here since. I saw them downtown Cleveland about 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really awesome. But I didn't realize all that went into Second City. I mean, it's more than just the show that you see. There's a lot more that goes into that.
Yeah, there's, you know, you got to plan. You don't really plan. There's some shows, depending on the style of the show, you'll have like an overarching thing, like long form, where it all kind of ties in together. I was better at the short form stuff, the Whose Line Is It Anyway stuff. That was more my thing because there isn't very much prep in those type of shows. In that these are the segments, but it's literally everything is right off the top of your head, and that's the part that's hard to keep going is to just trust your instinct, because you a lot of times you're going to fall flat on your face.
Well, instinctive, right? That's exactly what I was thinking. It's very instinctive, and isn't some of what you do with stand up at least a little bit instinctive too? I mean, you can prepare for a lot of that stuff, but a lot of it still is instinctive because you never really know what you're going to experience from one crowd to the next.
No, not at all. You know, there are times where you can be sitting there and you're like, you know, prepared, the most prepared you've ever been, and you go up there and just for whatever reason the audience isn't into it, and then you're just trying to fight to get them back, and then you got to figure out in your head, and that's what was great with improv, and that's why I took improv, also, is so that when those moments happen, which were happening often, I could be better prepared to just kind of come back and maybe quip something or do like quote unquote crowd work and just make jokes off of what people are saying in the audience and stuff like that.
Do you kind of go over your material? I mean, I would believe that's part of the beauty of improv is you kind of just do it and it's gone.
You just do it and it's gone. You don't have to worry about it. But with stand-up, I used to have to write literally word for word my material. Like every word that I was going to say into the microphone had to be on a piece of paper in that order. And I was very methodical about it. But as I kind of kept doing it and got a little more comfortable, I could kind of just write down like one word and then basically remember it. But I used to do a lot of open mics, but lately since I've been out here, I've been really busy and just haven't been able to get around to Cleveland open mics. Oh. So that was another reason to do this show here in Elyria, was for us to get a chance to actually go out and perform at least once a month.
Well, and you said this is relatively new, this thing that you and Glenn are doing. You guys have had a podcast going on for a long
couple
time.
Couple years now, yeah.
But this show where you bring in these comics, this is relatively new.
Yeah, we just started, I think August was our first show, and Glenn headlined that one. And we had one in September that was very successful as well. And I think this is our third one. And so far, people seem to really be enjoying it. And it's been really cool to see people come out to Elyria to see and, you know, support local comedy and local venues.
The comics that come, sorry.
I was just going to say, where do you find some of these comics?
That's what I was going to say.
Most of them we already know through having done the podcast. We've probably had them on the podcast before. Open mics, you know, my roommate, he runs an open mic at the TikTok Tavern in Cleveland, and just go hang out there and, you know, generally, if you just ask a comic, hey, do you want to do a show? The answer is going to be yes. So you can just kind of, it's like shooting fish in a barrel at that point. You just go, hey, I got a show. Yes. Where is it? what are you doing? When is it? How much time? What can I do to get on it? And you're like, yeah, all right, dude, it's this day. So yeah, that's basically, you just go hang out at open mics and just kind of watch people and you bring up the people who make you laugh.
What are some of the things that, like, draw you to some of these comics? You mentioned how you go about finding them. Is it more physical, what they do? Is it more the material you see in a particular night, or is it a combination?
The material, a lot of it, is, like, if it's making me laugh, generally it's going to be, I feel really good. I have a really high threshold for for laughing. And so it's
odd, though, as a comedian, isn't it? I mean,
no, not really. I mean, it goes back to that sitting in a room full of other comics and no one's kind of paying attention to each other. You're just kind of looking at your own stuff. And for whatever reason, when it comes out of another, there's just jealousy and all this envy and all these weird things. It's like, man, why didn't I think of that? It's like, I saw a lot of times I'm just mad that I didn't think of it. So I'm like, I'm not going to laugh. Like, that joke's great, though, man. Like, oh, that's such a good joke. Why didn't I think of it? But you don't get a laugh from me.
Sure.
It's just weird. I don't know. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, I mean, I'd imagine it's like anything else. When we listen to other radio programs, we listen to them a little differently, I think, than the average person does. So probably wrong the same as a comedian.
Yeah. It's like, maybe I would have done that differently or something. It's weird stuff.
Yeah, what the average Joe finds is pleasure in comedy. I mean, you're kind of breaking it down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, the difference in what a comedian finds funny versus what a regular audience finds funny is a big chasm. A lot of times, because a lot of times the comedians want you to go a little darker, and not every audience is prepared for that.
Well, yeah, because every audience is made up of so many different personalities, and you just have no idea how they're going to respond.
Absolutely.
One guy or girl could find that hilarious, where the next one might be completely offended by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's what also I really like about what Eddie's doing with Blank Slate is it's an all-encompassing welcoming space for everybody, where it's not a place to where you have to feel like you're going to get offended by something.
That's cool.
And that's what really drew Glenn and I to the idea. And the whole reason we actually didn't do a comedy show for the longest time with him is just because most comedy shows, you know, there's like a 2-drink minimum, you know, you gotta get people greased up a little bit, have them, you know, get some alcohol in them. How welcoming are people going to be to comedy when they're not a little tipsy?
Yeah.
And surprisingly well. That was the biggest surprise. I was like, wow, these people aren't even drunk and they think we're funny.
That's what we base our show. There's a thing at the beginning of the show. I must drink before listening. A little warning.
That was listed as a disclaimer, right?
Yeah,
that was a disclaimer back
that's
in
the word I was looking for.
Back in like the third week of February, we lost the show. That was a disclaimer on there. You will not enjoy it unless you've had at least two leading into it. Well, and your story is interesting too. You know, going from the Grange to LA, coming back home, but you do more than just stand up. I mean, not just your Second City stuff too, but you know, you've also done a web series. You've really gotten into film as well.
Yeah, I went to film school. That was what I went to college for. Always wanted to make movies ever since, you know, watching them as a kid, and took the journey into doing that. And it's been a lot harder than I wanted it. So I was looking for ways to kind of branch off and do new things to kind of maybe go and do stand up and then maybe get discovered that way. Then I can kind of loop back in. And now that I'm in the door through stand up, I can come back and do the filming or something. But it wasn't working out, and so I just kind of, I'm really good at doing the podcast stuff and putting together shows. So I was like, I'll just focus on that for a little while. And but I did just release a music video for a buddy of mine who performs. He's a musician in England, and I've been a fan of his music for such a long time, and he hit me up and he's like, you want to collaborate? And I was like, yeah. And so we just filmed that last year and released that about a month or so ago.
Wow.
And that was a lot of fun. We filmed that all up in Lakewood.
Cool.
So, and you mentioned your role tomorrow. You're not necessarily going to be up performing in the traditional sense, but you'll be up there kind of introducing acts.
I'll be up there probably in the beginning to do, you know, maybe 5 minutes off the top, just to kind of get everybody started, get everybody, you know, going, and then mostly just kind of popping in between acts, telling everybody, you know, who the next person's going to be, doing a little riff in between. But the show's not about me or Glenn; it's about the comics that we have that are going to be coming in performing.
Very cool stuff. Again, that's tomorrow night. Blank Slate, Elyria, Dean Zarbaugh here in studio with us. Dean, this is a lot of fun, man. This is a blast.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun for me too. Like you guys said, I'm used to being on the other side of this, so it's a little nerve-wracking for me being over here, having to answer questions instead of come up with them.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one's tougher. You know, after doing this for so many years now, I'm not sure which side of that's tougher.
For me, it's easier come up with questions. My dad was a journalist for 31 years, and he always asked questions, and so I got that from him. And so I've just always been a very inquisitive person. So I love asking questions and getting into people. One of my favorite podcasts actually is Mark Maron's WTF podcast.
Yes,
and
yes,
that was the podcast that made me want to do podcasts, because how deep he gets into the conversations with his guests, and that was kind of stuff that I really wanted to do.
That's interesting. There's a lot of good stuff out there. You mentioned the Norm Macdonald. I've been watching those lately on YouTube and other things.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me how the difference in interviewing. I think that's one of the fascinating things, too. In radio, I mean, Howard Stern, that guy does the best interviews you can possibly get. Craig Ferguson, when he was on the Late Late Show. It's just a conversation, it seems like, with a buddy. And I think, at least being from here and on this point, it's so hard, at least from my standpoint, to kind of get into that flow. But once you get into it, I think that makes for the best interviews, obviously.
The hardest interviews for our podcasts have been the ones we've been doing over Skype.
Yeah.
There have been some of our best, they're not sitting right across from us.
You can't read nonverbals and stuff.
Yeah, and even if it's a video Skype, there's still just this lag and just this extra, you know, we've been talking to people in England and New Zealand and Scotland and all these places. And so there's like this decent lag to it, and it kind of disrupts the flow. And some great, great guests we've had on, it's just getting used to the lag. And then, but like you said, once you get into it, it's great.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's a lot of fun once you're able to get that point across, though, too. I mean, that's a tough connection, too. Like Matt was saying, when you don't have those nonverbals to take a look at, that makes it really, really tough. Well, Dean, thanks again for coming to the studio, man. This is a blast.
Yeah, thank you.